This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Second Scout, home of the original magnetic timber daily routine helper and little agenda weekly planner, designed to make life easier for busy families. With easy visuals, their routine helpers, weekly planners, and home organization solutions speak a language the whole family can understand, even those non-readers.
Kids get to rock their day with confidence and predictability, while us parents get to save a little sanity. Once a task is completed, kids get to flip the tile over to reveal a star, which gives them a sense of achievement, encourages responsibility, and provides positive reinforcement.
Head to secondscout.com.au and save hello to smoother days.
We're not clowns. There is no way you can get balance in this stage of your life. I think we've got some really unrealistic expectations on new mums, on mums in the workforce. I just couldn't make it work as long as you are happy and content in your pathway. I've got no balance in my life. Absolutely no balance. If you're a mum juggling all the million things, that doesn't make you a better mum. I had a very dear girlfriend say to me, "What's happened to your ambition? Aren't you ambitious anymore?"
Sally Branson doesn't believe in balance when you have young kids. And as I write and record this at 8 p.m. on a Monday night, ahead of inevitable overnight feeds, before a day of having both kids tomorrow and making sure I pump enough to get to the city for paid work the following day, while my husband has our five-month-old while he tries to get as much work done as he can, I can't help but think that she might be right. I feel tired even saying all that. She's worked as the press secretary to the PM, she's run a political party, and she's held high diplomatic positions with the US. And in continuing her theme of taking on big roles, she had her two boys in quick succession too. In her own words, she's one of the older school mums, and for a long time, she wasn't even sure that motherhood would be her reality, even though she always ached for it. Here, we talk the new and different pressures that mums face today, the conversations we should be having about the reality of motherhood, and why whatever works for you is okay. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the warm hug of a human, Sally Branson. Sally, there's a new Zoom function that just failed me big time because it's recording our meeting notes, which is the new function. And I just realised we weren't recording, so you just gave me about 10 minutes of brilliant content and here we are starting again. So my first question for you was, you're seeing me here sway side to side. I'm wearing my baby, trying to make work in the best way that I can.
Doing a wonderful job.
Thank you. I want to know how it makes you feel, if it makes you reflect on certain phases of your life or if it brings up any feelings in particular.
Of course, Lucinda, and you're doing an amazing job. And I think it's really important to recognise that there's so much pressure on mums to make everything work. And people say, "Oh, we do the juggle." We're not clowns. The juggle isn't the right way to describe it. And balance isn't the right way to describe it because there is no way you can get balance in this stage of your life. I think we've got some really unrealistic expectations on new mums, on mums in the workforce, on how mums make it work. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. For me, we've spoken about this, I love the newborn stage. I could have 15 newborns if all the newborns. For me, I really wanted a big family. We've got two sons who are 5 and 7, actually Fenton's 6 next week. Must organise a cake or presents or get any of that organised. I was actually in a board meeting yesterday and on my screen I lifted my computer up and I had a toy shop opened and the lady next to me was like, "Oh, what are we buying here?" And I'm like, "Oh, God, I need to get it here in time."
Perfect example of making work as a parent.
Exactly. And I think for me, I would have loved a big family. I was an older mum. I am an older mum. You know, I'm 15 and 16 years older than some of the mum in my son's prep class. And a big family wasn't what was meant for us. So for me, for a really long time, I had a lot of grief when I used to see little babies and I was past that stage. And it's taken until now for me to really recognise that every stage is a really special stage. There are challenges for every stage. I have never wished away a day. And people can roll their eyes around that. Even the hard days, I always felt very grateful to be a mum. It's something that I wanted to do all of my life. And for a long time, I didn't think that would be my reality. So I bring that perspective. It doesn't mean that there weren't hard days, that there weren't days I was crying in the shower. But I then carried quite a bit of grief that I would never have a newborn again. And people talk about one and done or two and done or feeling done. I've never felt done and I still don't feel done, but I'm at the stage now where I can accept that that's what our life looks like. I can be really grateful for where we are. And I was just thinking about, I didn't realize how good every stage was really. And so particularly with my 7-year-old at the moment, on Mother's Day, he couldn't sleep. He woke up at 2 a.m. in the morning. He was so excited about Mother's Day. He made a card at school and there was a Mother's Day stall. He bought something with his, I think it was $20. So definitely inflation from when I was a kid, no 50 cent Mother's Day stall. And he's so excited. And he said to me, "Oh, Mum, I'm just addicted to you. I'm addicted to you. I'm addicted to Lego. I'm addicted to reading.
Oh my!
Addicted
God.
To Dad. I'm addicted to Fenton. I'm addicted to Nana." He did say, actually, caveat, he was like, "But Mum, I promise I'm not addicted to tech or online gaming." I was like, "Okay, Dale, thanks." Obviously, that's something that we talk a lot about in our house. But these beautiful stages at 7, I'm seeing increased level of awareness and all of those beautiful stages. So looking at you, I have nothing but admiration. And a little bit of me is, it feels really upset for us all as mothers around the expectations that we put on mums to be all things to all people. And I don't think that's getting better. I think that we've got more gender parity. There's more gender balance in our relationships at home. We're talking about the mental load more, but we're putting new and different pressures on mums. And I find it really interesting how we can each navigate them and how we can best support each other.
Yeah. That's interesting that you bring up the grief around babies, because that will definitely be me if someone ever asks me this question in 7, 10, however many years time. So it's nice to see that there's so many beautiful stages. So you have this big career. You work with names such as Clinton, Bush, Obama. Take us back to the start. I'm sure you could talk for hours about it, but if you give us the short version, tell us about your incredible career that led you up to your eldest, Magnus.
Okay, so I've always been interested in politics, diplomacy, international relations. I came from a really small country town, which gave me a beautiful grounding in communication and community and power of community. But on the flip side, I think when I actually did go to Melbourne and go to university, I felt that I was just a country kid and that other people had had big experiences or gone to amazing schools, and I perhaps didn't chase those dreams as much as I could. But then in hindsight, I think I've had a pretty good run at it, so, which is interesting. But I did community development. I started in politics. I've always been interested in politics. Now, last year I was in an event with women in business, and one woman who was running the event said, "Politics doesn't mean anything. It's got no value or worth to our lives. We're going to change the world." I really do believe that the modern mother and the modern woman has such power and agency and authority that we've never had before, and we will change the world in many regards because we've got the motivation, we've got the will, we've got the reasoning like mothers have for time immemorial. But the reality is all of that sits within a scaffolding of policy and legislation, childcare policy, economic policy, gender disparity, wage gap, all of that. So we need to be able to be contributing to politics. I've always believed in the power of policy and good legislation. And so I started off in politics. I went into community development in Outback New South Wales for a while. I did that for almost 10 years. I had an extraordinary time. I worked with the most amazing communities, but that real intersection between community and government and policy and making sure things were fit for purpose. And then I moved to Melbourne because I was single and I felt that I had a better chance of meeting someone, let's be honest, and living in Outback New South Wales. So I moved to Melbourne and I got a job with the US Embassy and I looked after media and public affairs. And then I became sort of a defence public affairs specialist because defence was such a big part of the life. So, you know, I did things like organised and planned an Obama visit. I was responsible for the public affairs campaign around the US Marine deployment, which was the biggest operational defence and strategic defence move in the US-Australian relationship for 100 years. And, you know, I did things like catapult off warships in aircraft carriers and climb down rope ladders from aircraft from warships into the sea. And, you know, we got a little pilot boat back into Darwin and all of these things. And I must admit, Lucinda, you know, sometimes when I was deeping, nappy changing or sleep deprived, I was like, am I the same person who did that?
Yes.
And many regards, I was like, yeah, I am. But then my life has radically changed. My perspectives have changed. I've become much more, I've always been solution focused, but the ability to see many more perspectives than I did before I was perhaps a mother, which again is why mothers are so important to policy and legislation development. So I did that. I had the most extraordinary experience there. And then I had a quick stint in commercial PR, which I thought would all be champagne and darlings. And it just wasn't the right fit for me. I wanted to do something that was values based again. I was approached by a prime minister to come and work for a prime minister as a senior press secretary. So I moved to Canberra. I was a senior press secretary for a government. I worked in a conservative government. I am economically conservative, but I am very socially liberal. I believe in equality and equity and all and the rights of the individual. So a lot of people feel quite challenged by my political history, my working history. I did that. I worked particularly around policies around adoption, around First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island issues, women's issues, women's entrepreneurship. And it's interesting because this was before I had children. And I can remember meeting with groups of women who were entrepreneurs and were moms. And I was like, could not think of anything worse. And then here I am 7 years later in that space. Mm-hmm. So that I had an extraordinary time and I felt so privileged to be part of something that, no matter what, that will be one of my career highlights, is being able to serve the Prime Minister of the country. It doesn't matter what people think of an individual Prime Minister. The ability to serve and to be part of something like that was a real honour for me, and that fits in with my values. I then went and moved back to Melbourne because I wanted to live with my partner. I wanted to have children. I was desperate to have children. And so I took a redundancy and I had a few months off to really focus on getting pregnant. And that was a bit of a job in itself and a pathway. And so I went to Pilates twice a day. I loved it. I was just like this real housewife of Melbourne for like 3 or 4 months. But then I went back as the state director of the National Party. And then when I was there, I fell pregnant. So I ran a federal election campaign, heavily pregnant. And it's interesting, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't feel that I could. I told the people who needed to know from work perspective and, you know, people who, you know, love me and things like that. But I still felt that I would be very much judged in that situation for being heavily pregnant and running an election campaign. So luckily it was for the Nats, who were extraordinarily supportive. You know, I'd wear jeans and boots and a big puffer jacket when I'd be out and about in communities. And then when I left to have a baby, and then all of a sudden I was heavily pregnant and was like, oh my God, what a surprise. And, you know, the election, we won the election, we won the only seat in Australia that way, and that won the seat for the government. And then I got married, and then a month later I had a baby. So I did that, and then I sort of went back to my first board meeting when Magnus was a month old, and I really felt I could do all the things. And for me, it was a really big lesson in ego, because I do believe I can do anything, but I just had to really focus on what was important. And for me, it was being a mum. And I love my job. Like, oh my God, I feel so lucky that I love work. I love my work. And it was such a big soul searching time to say 8 months into trying to make it work when Magnus was 8 months old, I knew there was a federal and a state election coming up, to say, I can't do this job. So, you know, I was going and I was breastfeeding, I was working from home, and then I was, you know, one day a week going into the office, and I'd be in the office, I'd be so caught up, and I was still breastfeeding, but it would be 7 o'clock at night and Jonathan would ring me and say, are you ever coming home? And I'm like, oh my God, and like these boobs everywhere. And but I just couldn't make it work to look after me, to look after my family, and to look after my job. So it was massive. And even for me, there was an article in a big newspaper saying, you know, the power brokers or the most important women in the country at the moment, you know, like the top 20, and I was one of them. And then for me to say, actually, I can't make it work.
Can't
I can't be a mum and love my baby and be there and have a happy relationship and be the very best at my job. It just wasn't the right time. And for me, I felt really ripped off. I was like, oh my God, I've been sold this. I can do anything. And then I was like, I can't do it all as well as I want to do it. And as I said, it was a journey to have babies. I didn't think I would be able to have babies. And then, God, I love my children so much. And I wanted to be there, and I wanted to go to mother's group, and I wanted to go to play group and be available. So that's the long story, Lucinda, to how I got to where I am now.
And so before we go forward, I want to go back, because you didn't know if kids were definitely going to be a part of your future. You're working this huge career, but you also wanted desperately to be a mum. And at some stages, you weren't sure if that was going to happen. Talk me through that in your 30s, having this, I guess, paradox. It might not be quite the word I'm looking for, but this high-flying career, but ultimately something you really wanted that you weren't sure was going to happen. How did you feel?
I was quite self-destructive. I played hard, like I worked hard, partied hard. I was that real stereotype of that when we were out and about, and I was always working away and, you know, living a glamour. It was, from all intents and purposes, seemed very glamorous lifestyle, and I was having fun. Like, all of my girlfriends who were married with kids were like, oh, you've got to write a book. And in some regards, I felt a bit like entertainment for them. I was living a life that they weren't. You know, some of my friends have children in their 20s now, and I've still got my babies, the littlest babies in our group. But it was, you know, I was doing such extraordinary thing. Also, you know how people say learn from comparison, and I don't think that always means from positive comparison, because I see particularly women, and again, it comes back to this argument that we can have it all. I see women who have dedicated so much of their time and effort into their careers, and now, as they're a bit older, feel a grief around what else is missing from a healthy, well-rounded life. And I'm not saying that motherhood is the be-all and end-all. It isn't. There are people with rich, full lives who haven't got children. And I've got quite a few friends who are like that, and they have wonderful lives, and they're very happy and content. As long as you are happy and content in your pathway. I wrote an article for somebody that did an interview the other day about how I found balance in my life. I've got no balance in my life. Absolutely no balance. None whatsoever. But I recognize what healthy looks like for me. So I recognize that it's that my children feel safe, that they can eat good food, that every 6 or 8 weeks we can go on a little family mini break. We've just been on one in Sydney, that I know what the conditions to feel good in my life are. They're not balanced. They're getting up at 4 a.m. to work so I can be at school. I can do pick up at 3 o'clock and then spend the rest of the day parenting. So I think the most important thing is to come to terms and find peace around what does good look like for you. I'd love to be up doing yoga at 6 o'clock in the morning, but I can't manage my wonderful, amazing clients and being a wonderful, amazing parent and do yoga every day. Like, if I get to a Pilates class a week, I feel like I'm winning at life.
Yeah.
And if I don't drink 4 coffees a day, I feel like I'm winning at life. Like, yeah. 2 piccolos is enough. It's about knowing the context of what works for you. And I think as mothers, this is so important, that the comparison is the thief of joy. And we look at how other people parent and how other people manage work. And, you know, there are some people who are doing extraordinary jobs in corporates and still managing little families. Oh, I couldn't make that work. But that's okay, because that's me. I'm not them. No way is better. They're all different ways. And I think the more conversations we have about realistic expectations about what we can do and realistic timeframes. I think timeframes is another thing. Like, I know before we started recording, you and I were talking about corporate careers versus working for yourself and expectations around where your salary gets to or what your work output is. It's just being aware and being self-aware, I think.
Yeah. And so you get to about 8 months postpartum. This is too much. It's not working. You're feeling a little bit let down by the systems that told you that women can have it all, whatever the fuck that means.
I know. And I still see it on Instagram, like, oh, my daughter's looking at me saying I can have it all. Oh, my God. If your daughter, oh, my God, don't even get me started.
Too tiring having it all. We need to find our version of all. So we're going to get to that too, actually. But you can't have been too far off having your next pregnancy beginning. True. And you just stepped back from work. Tell me about this time.
So Magnus must have been 10 months old, and I remember thinking I was pregnant and doing a pregnancy test, and yes, I was. And that process, the full improvement with him, didn't happen very easily and beautifully, and which sort of sums him up, really. He was just meant to be here. He is a force of personality. And he was like that, obviously. And then I remember Jonathan was feeding Madeline solids, and I was like, pregnant, which I was thrilled about. Jonathan was in shock for about a week on that one, the timing perhaps. And, you know, he was running his own family business and had Precious there. But in hindsight, it was the most perfect timing. And the whole time, actually, and it sort of leads me to the next stage, is that the whole time I was thinking there needs to be more conversations around support for mums and preparing. So I'm A-type and I like to be prepared. I do a lot of research. You know, I like really good, clear information. And when I was packing my hospital bag, I was like, this is an absolute shit show, excuse my language. You know, I'm university educated, I work in communications. I can find no clear instructions about what to take to hospital, even in a private hospital setting. So I made Ziploc bags and I labelled them and I, you know, became this packing queen. And anytime after Magnus, anytime any of my friends were having babies, and particularly younger friends for the first time, I would do them up a list of what they needed to buy and pack and how to pack them. And so then when I was pregnant with Fenton, I just sort of turned that into a business. We had bags manufactured.
I'm about to have two under 18 months. Let's start a business.
Yeah, I know. Ridiculous. And I love that business. It's called The Sweet Set. And we did a podcast, which I let go by the wayside because there's so many podcasts for new parents. And I couldn't give it the love that it needed, but we've still got The Sweet Set. We do good and we share good, robust information for parents. It's fact check. And particularly for me then, I had a one-year-old in COVID and I found that there was so much information that wasn't right, that wasn't being fact checked, that wasn't robust. So we really in that sort of COVID year became a portal for sharing good, robust information, not making the information up, but finding the best sources and talking to new mums about how to find the best information for your family. So it became sort of that communications portal. And I've loved The Sweet Set and we're still running The Sweet Set. But then I had some people say, you know, we've got this other issue. And I went back to my first work love, and that's sort of public affairs, PR, crisis management. So I moved into that. So we always have a lot going on. But again, as I said, I've got absolutely no balance in my life. But, you know, I really love my life. I'm having a lot of fun and I've got beautiful, healthy children and a beautiful husband. And so there's always a lot going on, but it's just recognising how you manage that.
And so Fenton comes to be, you have your business, The Sweet Set, and you eventually go back to your first love, as you say, in Korea. How do you actually make it work in those early days? And what timeline are we talking? How old is Fenton when you go back into a more corporate role while also juggling The Sweet Set?
Yeah, so we're very much into teamwork, making the dream work. So it's probably year and a half from Fenton when some people rang me and said that they needed help. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll help out. And, you know, this is my natural space of operation. So I actually find that easier than running an e-commerce business because it's that natural space. And this is the other thing that I get so frustrated about. You know, people are like, oh, start an e-commerce. You've got a laptop, get a Shopify site, you can start an e-commerce business. No, businesses are really hard to run. Postage, taxes, all of these things, and that we're setting up this false narrative around what it is to own a business. But so it is a more corporate setting. So I've got clients. I do work for myself though. So I've always had that freedom of we are very much a partnership, Jonathan and I. So when I've got busy time, he pulls back on his work. And when he's got, and there's a lot of uncertainty. Our whole family income is based on an e-commerce business and both of us being consultants in a regard. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. So if you need certainty in life, I would not recommend it. Someone the other day said, I've got a mortgage and marital stress. Should I start my own business? I was like, no way, don't start your own business. But I do things like, and it's interesting because there was an article in a newspaper and said that I started work at 4 a.m. in the morning. And I do in many regards. I get up and I work in the morning and then get the boys to school and then work and then make sure that I'm done by 3 and I block out the time in my calendar. But when, so Fenton's only gone into full-time structure this year. At 5 he went into prep. He had a shorts in daycare that didn't work for him, and then it really has been about the juggle, and it's about getting up early, fitting things in, being really open and honest with my clients around being a mum. And the amount of times that I have had Zooms or big client pitches and I've had a child in the background, I think the good thing about COVID is that it normalised the way women work and the way women have to work. We've kept it hidden for so long and hidden children in the background and been afraid to say, I'm a mum as well, so I need to manage those priorities. So I can meet with you at these times, and if it's really urgent, you can ring me and I will put ABC Kids on. I'll put a Bluey Marathon on and you can have me for an hour. But it's about saying these are the conditions that I work under because I'm parenting as well.
Well, there's just a bit going on. I remember my manager, who I was telling you about before we started recording, seeing her two young boys in the background of many a Zooms. And it was so nice for someone that was trying to conceive at the time, having that visibility of what it actually means to be a mother who engages in paid work. So I really value, there was a lot wrong with COVID and it was a devastating time, but I do value what it enabled mothers to show and bring them their real selves literally to work.
Yeah.
Because there were kids running around the background.
Exactly. And you know what? I've had a naked kid in a live TV interview, like, and I was like, oh my God. Anyway, luckily I was just like, moving my body to hide them from the blue screen. But it still doesn't mean that sometimes it feels easy or comfortable and you don't feel judged, or will I feel that I'm not as capable because I'm also making a peanut butter sandwich. And it's interesting, I spoke at a conference last week and I had to be there to hear a keynote speaker who I was doing a response to the next day. But it was in the hitting time for school pickup, so I went and picked up the boys. And I had their little snacks with them and I sat them back in the back of the corporate conference, and it felt a bit uncomfortable. I worried about them the whole time, would they get sick of it? But I bribed them with some screen time. So, you know, I saved the bribes up. And, you know, you're not supposed to write, but, you know, sometimes you've got to. And they sat there, they were beautifully behaved. And it's good for them to see that they have parents who work. I was brought up in a house where work ethic was one of the most important things, whether that's a good way to think or whether it's a bad way. Look, my therapist and I are still working through that. But it's good for the boys to see that's how they work. And in that situation, they need to be respectful of the work that I'm doing as well, and they need to sit quietly, eat their snacks, watch their Bluey, and then I'll take them home. But it still feels a bit sticky, but it's working through that stickiness.
I'm glad you brought up it feeling sticky because, as you know, I'm at my parents' for 2 nights because I need to be in Melbourne for a variety of things. And technically I'm on mat leave, Posey's only 4 months old. And I was just watching them watch me set up, thinking that in the back of their head, they're probably like, what are you doing this all for? And I sort of in the back of my head was thinking, what am I doing this all for? But we just have passions and we need to feed them sometimes. So it's good to know that it feels sticky for other people.
It does still, and some, I do that same thing. I often think, so I've been away Sunday night and Monday night. So I was with the boys. We were on a little mini break. This is one thing we do. We really try hard to get away together and just really in this stage be as tight as we can before other influences come in. But we were away, and then Jonathan flew home with the boys, and then I was in Sydney and Canberra and then back to Sydney, and then I was home late last night. So I just saw the boys today. That still feels pretty sticky and awful, and all the mum guilt feelings. But I went for a really big and important meeting for a national board to give some perspective on. It wasn't paid. It was just that it was something that I feel passionate about. And so that was important for me to do. And it's not about, you know, like I have struggled. And honestly, when I hear people say, and it's a valid point, but I've had a bit of a struggle with it, that being a mum isn't enough. And I get that. Being a mum isn't intellectually stimulating. Being a mum drives me insane. That's okay. I get that. But I haven't felt that. And also for me, mothering and parenting is such an important future-proofing role that we're doing, and that perhaps somewhere in this big conversation, and I'm a feminist, 100% feminist, somewhere in this conversation we're missing the piece around giving mums the opportunity to mother and have follow their passions and follow their careers and how we can better support them. I haven't got any of the answers, but let's not devalue the work that's unpaid and that mums do at home. Let's not, if you're a mum juggling all the million things, that doesn't make you a better mum. if you're a mum that's got the wherewithal to follow their passions, that doesn't make you doing a better job. It's such a, I keep coming back to the word sticky. It's a fraught conversation around motherhood. And as mothers, we don't want that for each other. We just want love and support and care and compassion, but we've got all these constructs around it. But I do think, and there, so I'm going to the States next week to talk at like the International Crisis Management Conference. I'm really excited because some other people speaking at that conference are of extraordinary caliber and work history. And, you know, I want to meet them and fangirl a bit, let's be honest. But I feel so anxious about being away and being on the other side of the country for 10 days than my boys and my husband. And also another thing to add to the mix is I had really severe postnatal anxiety and worked through that with some good psychologists, with some not so great psychologists. And so I feel really passionate about supporting mum's mental health and having really honest conversations around you will feel anxious, you will feel hard. These are beautiful days, but they're also hard days. So I'm rambling a bit on that, Lucinda, but I don't do anything perfectly. But my key is I do good work for good people and I try and be the very best mum I can. So the other day I went, I was a school excursion mum, and for my son at 7, that was the most, so, you know, I could be working in a corporate making lots of money, but the reason I'm not doing that is A, money is the most important thing, but B is that I wouldn't have in my roles, I wouldn't have the flexibility that I need to be the type of parent I want to be. And it's all, again, it comes down to the fact we can have it all, but perhaps not just not at the same time. And for me, it's the flexibility. I'm prepared to wear the 4 a.m. starts or the 3 a.m. starts and, you know, not be making the money I was making in corporate to have the flexibility to go to the grade 2 science. But I'm in a privileged position that, you know, I'm older, I've worked really hard in my career to be in a place where I can work for myself.
So two big things came up from me just then as you were saying that. The first was this idea that it's not that mothering isn't enough for you. And I think that's a really interesting one because I feel the same. And sometimes it's difficult to reconcile that I want to have a career and I want to pursue paid work, but it's not because motherhood isn't enough. Firstly, how do you reconcile those two things? And secondly, when on earth are you looking after yourself if you're getting up at 3 or 4 a.m. every morning?
Well, the reconciliation, I don't think you can. I think
maybe that's why you use the term sticky.
Like it is sticky. And also, I keep coming back to them. Think we've been sold a lie and we need to be honest that it's hard. And also, I suppose from the perspective now of having my babies about to turn 6, that they're the longest, shortest days. Everyone says that. And it's just for a short amount of time. And if you've got the wherewithal and the luxury or the privilege, or if you've worked hard and you've saved, you don't have to go back into paid work and you can sit in that. This is just a short period of time I'm not in paid work. I think another factor in this is that as we're broadening our thinking about main caregivers, that and workplaces are changing and being more flexible. But again, this is only in a small echelon of society. That workplaces are more and a very privileged part of society where, you know, the other parent can do some more of the mothering and caring. I haven't got an answer. It remains unreconciled for me. And I suppose it always will remain unreconciled. And for me, it's an ego piece. I really had to let go a lot of ego and what other people would think about me to be able to say, I want to do a mothering bit for a fair bit. And also I want to be able to stay home and, you know, like, and I look around like I've had little episodes where I've got really sad about material things where I look at peers and colleagues who've had the same work history and particularly men who are now in really big salaried corporate jobs driving their Porsche and, you know, some of them with their Chanel handbags. And I thought, oh, my God, where's my Chanel handbag as I'm carrying around? I'm still using my nappy bag from 5 years ago because, you know, it fits a lot of stuff in it. And I've had moments where I'm like, I've worked harder than anyone I know. And that's not true. I know people who've worked harder. But,
it's an interesting piece. It sort of goes back to the unpaid nature of a lot of what we do, right? And the undervalue that mothers face every day in life.
100%. And that a society, I think that you know, we haven't got the balance and we never have had the balance around putting the value on parenting. It doesn't matter what form your parenting takes, whether you're a single parent, whether you're in a same-sex marriage, whether, you know, you're parenting someone else with children. Parenting takes so much time and effort and so much attention that we often, we devalue that work. And, you know, even for me, like, oh, I feel like such a failure in so many regards that my house is constantly in a state of chaos. I cannot keep up with the washing. The only way that I can even semi keep up in the washing is save it all for a week. And instead of doing it at home, taking to a laundromat, I feel that like this is genius. Laundromat, putting it in the biggest one I can find, doing the whole week's washing in once, and then putting it in the dryer, the whole week's washing in one dryer, and then it's done in 2.5 hours. Mind you, then it comes and sits here in my bedroom in baskets and never, ever gets put away. So I had to, yes, in Sydney, I was freezing, but I didn't pack a single because couldn't find it. So it's probably in one of these washing baskets somewhere that hasn't been touched for 4 months. And, you know, part of me is like, oh, what sort of mum am I that my boys don't live in a pristine laundry? You know, their laundry isn't pristinely folded. So still putting all of those useless, worthless, exactly, cannot keep on top. And I know people bang on about it, but a real issue at the moment for me is looking at, and mums who are younger than I am who are seeing this on social media of these perfect lives and that are wholly curated and that are monetized, and we're not having an honest conversation around what those realities are. You know, we can do an Instagram versus reality, but it's not.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one too, because if you've grown up in a suburb, for the most part, not always, but people in that suburb will likely have a similar economic or financial situation to you. But then in social media, someone with very little income, disposable income, any income, have access to these people that bring in millions a year. And so where we may have used to have comparison already, it's exacerbated by bigger ends of the spectrum. Like, it's insane that we even compare 100%. Ourselves with these people online.
It is, and it's amazing. If we're feeling that as mothers and as adult women, what are 12 and 13 and 14-year-old girls feeling? So for me, that's a whole big piece around what's going to come. And I know there's a bit of contemporary discussion about that in the media, but I just think we're so hard on mums. And that's why podcasts like yours, where, you know, you're talking about that stickiness and that inability to reconcile. How do we get back to work in a good way? How do we manage it? How do we look after ourselves? How do we be a good parent? How do we not beat ourselves up around our non-Instagram perfect life or, oh, you know, our bodies and our, I suppose you asked me about self-care. I'm a really
I really want to get into that now because I'm a big I can't even imagine that you're sleeping enough during the week. Not to make you feel bad about not getting enough sleep.
No, I'm a big fan of meditation. So, and I think meditation is another thing that's got a bad rap that people think, you know, you've got to meditate for 45 minutes in a lotus position. I've got insight timer. You can do a meditation in 5 minutes. So I try and do one a day, either side of the day. For me, what, you know, like I've always worked at a million miles an hour, always, or then falling into a heap. So for me now with kids, and I can't afford, I've got this sexy voice going on. It's actually just the remnants of a cold, but I can't afford to get sick because I've got a parent, but equally, and my mum lives 100 metres away in a village in an aged care place. So she's a very big part of our life and there is obligation and responsibility there. In a great way. But this is another thing about the boys being older there. When they were little, she wasn't well and unable to do that caring grandparent role. Now they're 5 and 6. They can feed themselves. They can turn on the TV. They can put themselves in their pajamas. They can have a shower, that they are spending more time with her, which is really lovely and that intergenerational stuff. But I've always run a million miles now and then crashed. But what I need to do is, so one thing that we do is that every 5, 6 or 7 or 8 weeks, we go away somewhere as a family. And often I work while I'm away. And that's okay for the boys to see that as part of having your own business and doing good work is that there is work involved. But we try and do little exploratory things. And for me, I can manage myself until I have that little break and then I have that little break. So for me, it's not everyday self-care. I go to the gym. We live at the beach. We're outside a lot. You know, I try not to have 15 coffees a day. So that's a sort of self-care. my juice and my value is love and connection. They're my key values. And so, for example, of a morning, I had a 7:30 meeting this morning, but Magnus was up at 6. So he and I sat on the couch. He had a Milo. I had a coffee. We just had a cuddle and a talk. And that is where that, I know that sounds naff, but that really enriches that connection for me.
Oh, that's
really
where the
important.
Magic happens. I love those that mornings is magic. On the couch when they're still half asleep and they're so cuddly and sweet.
Snuggly.
So it's more about little moments for you, getting little moments in for self-care, little bits of fresh air, little bits of taking a breath, getting it where you can and knowing that I guess you're in still a busy season or that this won't be forever. And that you love energy. Like you obviously love being busy and you've come to accept that rather than work against it and be like, I should sleep 8 hours a night and I should
100%. And do you know what? I think that is the key. It's self-awareness to recognize that we're in different stages of our lives all the time. We've got different needs and what we're, you know, as I said, like I was joking with another one of the Prime Minister's press secretary. So he's actually on paternity leave now. He went into corporate after government. He's got a new daughter. She's a year old, almost a year. And I was in Canberra about 2 weeks ago for a meeting. I was in the cafe that he and I used to go to get our green smoothies before our runs, before we went into the office at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I sent him a message of a piccolo at this same cafe. And I was like, I've just had my second piccolo. Back in the day, 8 years ago, 7, 9 years ago, when it was, we would have had a green smoothie and been for an hour run and then headed up to the hill in our activewear. What are we doing now? Like, we're just in different stages. And so self-care looks different. And recognizing that what self-care for one person isn't the prescription for me. The other thing that I do, and I'm really honest and open about this, is I have a psychologist who I see regularly. And, you know, last year for a certain amount of time, I saw her every week. Every Friday, I had an hour with her. That for me is self-care because that's about mental health. And I work in crisis PR and comms. So I deal with people who there's deaths, there's, you know, everything that needs a trigger warning I work with on a daily basis. And I've spent 3 hours this morning talking to somebody, you know, about something really big and heavy. And so I need self-care for that, and that's from a mental perspective. And I think every mum should go to the GP and get their 10 Medicare healthcare plans, because I'm about reducing the stigma on this. Medicare subsidises psychologist visits. They subsidise 10. If you're a parent, you get 12 because 2 are considered for your child. A lot of people know that. And it's a prevention rather than a cure perspective. Yeah. And let's talk about how we can support mum's mental health. The other thing is I'm on the National Board of COPE, which is the Centre of Perinatal Excellence. They're based out of Melbourne and they've got a great app around mums and self-care and parents and warning signs and preventions and measurements around mental health, wellness and parenting. So that's something I think about a lot.
Sally, I will let you go after this question because I think we're both on borrowed time. You're a busy mum and I have a baby who's just getting a little bit regular. My last question for you is, we both obviously don't subscribe to the women can have it all theory or the women can have it all message. What do you think should be the messages for mums that want to pursue paid work, or also actually the ones that don't and that find value in their mothering and can afford to step away from paid roles, for all mums?
For me, it's about scaffolding. So you've got to have the scaffolding right. I wouldn't be able to do this if I didn't have a partner who shared the same values around work and contribution and the type of work that we do. So that's a really big part of the scaffolding. For mine, if I could encourage anything, it would be the self-awareness piece around what works for you is okay. You don't have to answer to anyone else. You know, we all have to pay bills, unfortunately, and cost of living is massive at the moment. But what's your context? What does success look like for you in a workplace? What are you prepared to compromise on? And, you know, this whole message, we should never compromise. The reality is that sometimes you've got to compromise. So you control that narrative. You control and have your boundaries around what you're prepared to compromise on, what your boundaries are. I did some work with a client the other day, and it's interesting that a lot of the pushback I see around older mums who've got grown children, who, you know, have children in their 30s and 40s, who seem to have forgotten what it's like or didn't have the support structures or the conversations that we have. And so they're not prepared to let us have that. I spoke to a client the other day and she works in a context where there's some older mums there. And I rang her about something and she said, look, I just want you to know I'm not answering calls or answering emails or answering my WhatsApp after 3 o'clock. So that's my hard and fast boundary. And I was like, yes, this is what I love around setting those hard and fast boundaries. And the reality is no one's going to do it for you. And Mrs. I learned this the hard way last year. Eric Clonan from the Digital Picnic said to me, as a giver, you've got to set the boundaries because takers never do. And that's what it, you know, it was coming out of a context of drama around an experience that we both had. And she said that to me and it really resonated, not on a dramatic scale, but on an every element of life. If you have the wherewithal, spend the time before you go back to work or working out if you want to be. I actually got a lot of pushback about being a stay-at-home mum. So I got so much, oh, you've worked so hard for your career. I had a very dear girlfriend say to me, what's happened to your ambition? Aren't you ambitious anymore? And I was like, I am. My ambitions have changed.
Yeah.
So my measurements and my ambitions have changed. And recognizing that it's okay to change your ambitions and your measurements, that it's okay to think what was important 5 years ago might be equally as important now. You just have to put better boundaries around it, or just you couldn't even care about anymore. And recognizing that we're all human. So it's about setting boundaries, being really clear and self-aware of what your boundaries are. And I actually did. I found that really hard to manage other people's expectations about me not being ambitious anymore. And I still manage that. Like I had an approach to be a federal politician recently and I turned that down because it was something that I, and they were like, you know, if you do this and this, you'll be able to do this and this is what change you'll be able to make. And isn't this what you've worked to all your life, this sort of action step? And I know it sounds ridiculous when I say that policy and legislation, I believe, change, but there's other ways that you can do it. But I was like, you know what? That is what I thought I wanted. But at this stage of my life, I want to pick up my kids from school. So how do I contribute in other ways? So it's about setting boundaries and working out how you can contribute to get that juice and those values and that connect that you need.
That is excellent advice to finish up with. Sally, if people want to find the Sweet Set online, or even you, because I think you post quite a bit on LinkedIn and I think you'd be happy to connect with others. Where could they go?
So the Sweet Set is at the Sweet Set, THESUITESET on Instagram. So as in birth sweet, not sweet as in lollies. And so we're on there. On Instagram, I am Sally Branson. Just search Sally Branson. I'm a crisis PR specialist. I'm a reputation authority and I love LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is an excellent platform. I'm spending a lot of time playing in that space because I'm connecting with some great people. And the beauty is, Lucinda, you mentioned it on Instagram that people from the same suburbs are not in that connection comparison. It's like, you're comparing yourself to Kimmy or Hailey Bieber. No one, no pregnant woman listening to this should be following Hailey at the moment. That on LinkedIn, though, it's the flip side that you can connect with women in the space and in the stage of your life. It's like, for me, I found it like the most important virtual network about women in with similar ambitions to me.
Well, thank you so much. You're very passionate about connection and working with and not against other women, which I've noticed in our comms together. So thank you for being such a champion of women and people in general. And thanks for chatting to us today.
Oh, Lucinda, thank you for the work that you're doing. It is so important and you're very brave having big conversations with Posey there in the carrier. So she's done a beautiful job too. So well done.
She has done a good job. I'm waiting for, and it won't be her fault, but I'm waiting for the time when this doesn't work anymore. So stay tuned, fellow listeners, because eventually
I'll give you the tips then. I'll ring you at 4 o'clock in the morning and we'll be talking. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.